First of all, welcome to St. Mark's Church. We're very happy to have you guys here. I met all of you outside in the parking lot, and I remember Anna Simone.
Yeah.
David.
No.
Danny.
David.
Sorry. That's close enough. I remember Steve. I remember Maura. I remember Maria and Miriam. Very good. Did you guys meet everyone? Like, this is Steve. Okay, Steve is serving the high school here. He's also my brother. I guess he's older. Maura is also serving the high school. She's going to be our usual clicker for there. Maria, you guys met with the songs. Okay, and Miriam is here. Miriam is one of our beautiful student leaders in the high school. We have a great group in high school. So we're very happy to have you guys here. What the heck are we talking about here this weekend? God we trust. Very good. So you guys are all prepared. We're going to talk about the subject of trusting in God, which you know you see on the money and stuff like that. And it's a very timely kind of subject based on the events of this past week. I know you guys are in New York. I don't know what you guys heard up there, but Jersey. Sorry. Sorry, Jersey. Actually, I was born in Jersey. Westfield. Westfield. I was baptized in the church of Westside, but born Westfield. Is that clear? Near you guys? No. Okay. So I don't know what you guys got access to up there, but here, I mean, we've been flooded with just, like, there's only been one thing that's everywhere. The whole Virginia Tech stuff, you know. For those of you who don't know, Virginia Tech is about 4 hours south of here, and we have a lot of students there from the church, and, like, there's three main, like, big state schools, University of Virginia, Virginia Tech, and, like, James Madison. So this is one of the bigger universities. So tell me, you guys, how do you feel when you hear about stuff like that? Like, I honestly don't know, like, how much, is it, like, everywhere on the news for you guys?
Yeah.
Is it, like, everyone talks about it, you guys wear the little pins and stuff, or no? So, like, yesterday we all wore, like, yeah. So, like, what's the reaction when you hear stuff like that?
I get scared.
You get scared? Okay.
Terrifying.
What'd you say? Sorry?
Terrifying.
Taking scared to the next level. Okay. I think that's the one most common thing that everyone feels is, like, fear and scared. Why? Yeah. Isn't the scariest part of it all that really, like, unless you walk around with bulletproof vest and sit in a drive a tank to school every day, there's really nothing that you can do to defend yourself against something like that, right? Like, the people, like, sometimes, okay, this guy was drinking and driving, he died. We don't get bothered by that as much because he, like, it's his fault. You know, we say he drank, he drove, he died. Okay. But these guys just went to school on a Monday morning. And if you, like, you haven't been to college, but these guys were at class on Monday morning at 8 a.m., like, only, like, the goody-goodies go to class on Monday morning at 8 a.m., okay? I remember I took one 8 a.m. class my first year of college, never anything before 11 after that, okay? 11 was my earliest after that. No one goes to class Monday morning at 8 a.m. These guys were in class. There's no way to protect yourself against something like that, and that's what kills us, okay? Because we love how much money, I don't know. Billions of dollars in Homeland Security, and billions of dollars in police, and in Army, and Navy, and Air Force, and Marines, and all this kind of stuff. Technology, and security, and metal detectors, and this and that. But in the end, some punk kid decides 32 people get wiped out easily. Where's the billions of dollars that we spent on technology? Where's all the Homeland Security and all that, like... That's what really is terrifying about it, is that I could be doing nothing wrong, just walking down the street one day, and boom, some idiot decides to go crazy, and the rest of us are gone. Whenever stuff like this happens, okay, this country and the people in the country do something funny, okay, which is not bad, but it's not 100% right. Spend more money on security. Bring more police officers around. Spend more on technology. Homeland Security, all this kind of stuff, which is good. But let me ask you a question. Is that going to do anything? Is it going to matter? The church door is open right now. Some kid could walk into church right now and shoot every single one of us. Doesn't matter how much Homeland Security and how much George Bush does and how big our airplanes are. Like, it doesn't matter, okay? Because in this country, you have a right to carry a gun and you have a ability to pull it at any time. So the answer is, unfortunately, that no one can really give us peace and security no matter how much money we spend. Now wait a minute. Where's the King of Peace in all this? Like, don't we say that Jesus is the King of Peace? Don't we say that? Doesn't the priest say that every liturgy? Oh, King of Peace, grant us your peace. Isn't that everyone's favorite part of Holy Week? That part, O King of Peace part, right? Everyone loves that part. Isn't that everyone's favorite thing, O King of Peace? How can he be the King of Peace, but I had no peace? But I'm scared to death to just walk outside and go to class and all that kind of stuff. Our question that we want to answer today, click, is where we can find peace. It's not in the military, and it's not in Homeland Security, and it's not and the funny police officers down at Virginia Tech. You know, this question of where you can find peace is a very popular question. If you want to have some fun, go home when you guys go home and go on Google and type in the word, how to find peace. Okay? Type that in. That's what I did. I'll read you the top results that came back. First thing that came up was relaxation CD, like some kind of calming music. Second thing was some kind of wireless baby monitor, which I didn't really get. Third one was How to Grow Rich book. Okay, a book by a guy, How to Grow Rich. Fourth one was something about a senior citizen home or something like that. Next one was something in Chinese, which I couldn't really understand. Something about fragrances or herbal or something like that. Next was an investigative services, like a private eye kind of a thing. Next was a weekend camping trip and bike tours in Vermont. And the last one was another one in Chinese that, again, I couldn't read. There's a lot of people who are willing to invest a lot in trying to sell this peace thing because everyone wants it. Especially after 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina and Virginia Tech shootings, everyone feels the same thing. Give me something, and I'm willing to pay for it, that makes me peace, that gives me security, so that I don't have to worry when I walk outside in the street. I can tell you where that peace comes from. I can sell it to you even though Google can't. The answer of where does peace come from? Give me a click, Mora. I don't know why it's not that bright. Can you guys read this? It's in your handout. Everyone read it together with me. One of the best verses in the Bible. You will keep... I didn't hear anyone. 1, 2, 3. You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Isaiah 26:3. You want to memorize a verse in the Bible? Choose this one. Actually, believe it or not, kind of randomly, whoever put together the program for this retreat said this is our theme for today. I, about a year and a half ago, decided that I want to make an active attempt to memorize Bible verses. Like, I used to see, like, the good priests and, like, the spiritual people, like, be like, oh, yeah, in Matthew chapter 6. I want to be cool like that and say Bible verses. So I decided that every week I'm going to try to memorize a verse. You know, the first verse I chose was actually this one. So this verse has been with me now for a year and a half, and it's the best verse in the Bible. Because it promises exactly what we're looking for. Not just peace, but perfect kind of peace. Where does it come from? Give me a click, Mora. Perfect peace comes from trusting in God. Write it down. Perfect peace comes from trusting in God. It says, you will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. So the Bible makes a link between the peace that you have in life and the amount of trust that you place in the Lord. It's drawing like a direct correlation. If you have this much trust, you have this much peace. If you have this much trust, you have this much peace. If you have this much trust, look out, man. You're not going to have any peace in life. We need to figure out today what it means to trust in the Lord, okay? Because this is the answer to our problem of where to find peace. Now, let me just start you off right here in case some of you genius high school kids think you already know the answer. It doesn't say you'll keep him in perfect peace who goes to Sunday school every week, or who gets the biggest piece of Lomitza Baraka on Sunday, or who prays the Egbeya and memorizes it and things like that. It talks about trusting in the Lord. So it's not so much, go ahead, it's not so much about what you do, but I want you to know that you could do a bunch of stuff and never trust in the Lord. So please don't start off by thinking, okay, trust in God, okay, I should stop skipping Sunday school, then I'll be okay. Not necessarily about that. We need to figure out what it really means to trust in the Lord. But the first thing that you can see very clearly is if you want peace, which you do, it doesn't come from you. It has to come from someone bigger than you. Common sense. If I'm going through a scary neighborhood, okay, and I'm a small little guy, the only way I'm going to make it through there, okay, is if I have a big guy with me, or preferably many big guys, okay? So, same thing. The world has big and scary. The only way you're going to make it through is you have someone bigger, and that person is God. Do you know how important this "in God we trust" is? That God wanted to give us a reminder of it. And you probably remind yourself of it without even knowing, probably 100 times a week. You come to church on a Sunday, and you probably remind yourself at least 10, 15 times on an average Sunday. Do you know where you remind yourself? In the Lord's Prayer and the Our Father. You pray the Our Father, and most of us pray it without even thinking. But there's something that you say, which is, give me a click there more, as it's in your hand on Matthew 6:11, give us this day our daily bread. Okay? You've probably said that 1,001 times and maybe never even thought about it. What does it mean when we say, give us this day our daily bread? What you are doing is reminding yourself exactly of Isaiah 26:3, that you'll keep him in perfect peace, his mind has stayed on you because he trusted you. You ever thought about why we pray this prayer? Give us this day our daily bread. First of all, it's Holy 50. Why the heck do I want bread? Give us this day our daily pizza, lahma, anything like that. Would make more sense. And why would I ask for daily bread? I mean, I go home, my fridge is full of food, and my pantry is full of stuff. Why do I need, like, why am I begging God for a piece of bread? I'm like, I got bread, you got bread. What the heck are we asking for right here when we pray this? Obviously, we're not asking just for bread, okay? And the issue here is not bread. And what your biggest need in life is not more bread. In fact, out at our congregation every Sunday, I think there's many people who could use less bread on a daily basis. But that's another issue. The issue is him reminding us that we need him for everything. Because bread is a symbol of your daily needs. If you go to Egypt, there's no such thing. I don't care what time of day it is, or I don't care what time of year it is. There's no such thing as a meal without aish. There has to be aish at every single meal. It doesn't matter if it's morning, noon, or night, there has to be the aish. Okay? And for some people, this is like the most critical part of the meal. What we're going to see is how we're going to put these two verses together. We're going to discuss these two verses today. What does it mean to trust in him so that he gives us perfect peace? And specifically, what does it mean when we say, give us this day our daily bread? This is the key to trusting in God. Okay? Let me click there, Maura. So what we're going to see is three aspects of what it means to trust in God. Number one is to seek God as the answer to my needs. Okay? Trusting God means seeking God as the answer to my needs. Every one of us has things that we need in life, okay? That will change depending on where you are in life or who you are or your age or stuff like that. Anytime you have a need and you go to anywhere other than God equals not trusting in God. What are some, for example, needs that we have in life? Like when I say going to God for your needs, what are your needs? I mean, you look like you need a nap right now. What you need? The man's not very, very good. What do you need in life? Huh? What do you got? You guys got no needs? Hey, that's great. I'm gonna go talk to your parents and tell them you don't need nothing anymore. That you need an allowance. That you don't need me to ever ask them for anything because you guys have no needs in life. I'm sure they'd be very surprised by this. What's your needs? Okay, somewhere to live. Someone needs to help this girl out. You have no place. I'm assuming you're in a transition phase in your life. Okay, very good. Okay. We have social services. Okay. Need food. Okay. Clothing. Okay. Come on, guys. Like, be honest with me. The stuff that you bug your parents about and that you bug God about.
A car.
A car. Very good. Success. Very good. How about, I don't know, to be popular? How about, I don't know, to have a social life? How about, I don't know, to have fun in life? These are the things that occupy us, okay? And we feel it is our need on Friday night to have fun. And when our parents take away that need, we go crazy. Okay? How could they take away my right and my need to have fun and all that kind of stuff? There's lots of things that we think that we need in life. And what this is saying, okay, what I'm saying here is, anytime you have a need, the first place you should go is God. And the first thing that will do is we'll eliminate some of the stupider needs in life. Okay? Hard to go to God and say, God, I need an Xbox. I really need one. Okay? So it eliminates some of the stupider things that we think we need. But the other thing that it does is the things that we truly need, it teaches us to trust in God for them. Imagine this. You're a parent. Okay? I'm a parent, so I can speak from experience. If you have a child, in theory, you love the child very, very much, or else you wouldn't have had children. If your child comes to you and in need, let's say like our friend over there doesn't have a place to sleep at night, okay? Homeless, in the street, and my child comes to me. What will be my response to that child? What are the chances that I say, sorry, buddy, tough luck? If it's truly a need that they have in life, any chance I turn them away? Look at Matthew chapter 7, verse 9 through 11. Our Lord Jesus Christ says, what man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? He gives like a stupid example, okay, but he's trying to make a point. Or if he asks for a fish, we'll give him a serpent. If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? As a father, I can say that God, like, programs something into your, like, genes as a father that makes you want to provide the needs of your children, okay? It's something that I have a kid who's two and another one who's, like, 2 months, okay? 2 years and 2 months. So there's something that is ingrained that when you see your child in need, that you will do anything in order to provide for it. I can't explain it. It's something that's inside every father, okay, on earth. How much more so would it be about our Heavenly Father? Now, listen to what I'm saying. I'm not saying I do whatever my kid wants me to do. Okay? I'm not saying anytime he wants anything, I give it to him. I'm not saying that if I did that, my child would be a brat. Okay? A spoiled brat if he got everything that he wants. Okay? By the looks of some of the smiles here, some of you are spoiled brats, aren't you?
No.
We have a potential suspect right here. I'm not saying that he gives everything that we want, but what I am saying is that he gives everything that we need. And he is 100% committed that if any one of his children doesn't have something that they need, now the key word there is need, that he'll provide it for us. Oh, but wait a minute. There's like a key at the end of it. It's right there by the electrical outlet right there. Maybe you can see it. Look at the last three words in your hand in the verse. To those who what? Why ask him? If he's a father, he should love to just give us, right? Why do we have to ask him? Because this is how you prove your trust in God. Okay, this is what trusting God means. It means that if I don't have a sandwich to eat today, I go ask God. And that means if I am, let's be more practical, forget about the sandwich. If I am lonely, before I go to what's her name or what's his name or what's their names, to try to fix my loneliness, I say, God, I'm lonely. Can you help me? Before I'm confused in life, I don't know where to live, okay? Or I don't know which college to go to, or I don't know what decision to make about something. Before I go ask my idiot friends at school who are always making stupid decision after stupid decision, let me go to God first and ask him. You'll keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he's in you. So the key right here, seeking God is the answer to my needs equals prayer, okay? But like, again, I'm not just saying, okay, pray the Igbaya every night and everything will be fine in your life. I'm saying when you have a need, turn it to God in prayer. Why is it, if God is willing to give all our needs through prayer, that we don't go to him more? Like, think about this. God has promised many times in the Bible, and you could probably quote me the verses, that anything that you ask, he'll give you. Whatever you ask in my name, believing, these things I will give you. And right here it says, give good things to those who ask him. We all know the verses, but I guarantee you there's many of us who don't ask God on a regular basis. Don't ask God, let's say, even forget about throughout the day, even on a daily basis, for the thing we need. Why? It doesn't make sense. If I tell you, there's free stuff coming out of here. Okay, all you need to do is come and ask, and there's free pizza coming out of the wall right here. Every one of you would push the other person to get to the free pizza coming out of the wall. I'm telling you, there's free answers to prayers if you pray. Why is it that we don't pray? You ever thought about that? Why? Interactive. Or maybe you guys are all prayer experts. Is that what it is? So everyone here is praying 7 times a day about everything that they need? Uh-huh. Yeah, the bottom line is, whether you say it or admit it or don't admit it, you don't believe it. If you believe that prayer solves all the problems in this world, you'd pray day and night. If you thought prayer could solve all your problems, even the homeless ones, you would never stop praying. The problem is our view of prayer, we don't believe what God says. And I can prove it to you. Let's say you go today. I'm sorry, I'm going to keep picking on you. What's your name again?
Maria.
Maria. Let's say our friend Maria right here decides today, I'm going to trust in God and God alone. And she goes and she prays for like 3 hours. She skips every activity for the day, goes in front of the altar right there, and spends 4 hours in prayer. And then God sends her a house today. God, just boom, there's a house for Maria. Would you be surprised or not surprised? Very surprised. When you pray, are you more surprised if your prayer gets answered or not answered? When you ask God for something, and he comes through, hey, everyone, guess what? I got answered a prayer. Okay, like this is the way it should be. I'm not pointing at you, I'm saying all of us, okay? But I'm just saying something that's inside of us. Is we don't really believe it. That's why when our prayers doesn't get answered, it's not news. It's standard. You would be shocked if God answered all your prayers today. That's not a good thing. That says something about what you believe about prayer. To be honest, most of us view prayer as it's nice, it's good, it's like a thing to do, but let's be honest, it doesn't really change stuff. It's not a significant thing. It's like a nice way to spend time and, you know, something you should do and Our Father and stuff like that, but it doesn't really make a difference in anyone's life. That's why usually when we have a need, we try to solve it ourselves. And then when all else fails and we're thrown out on the street, that's usually when we turn to God. There's a story about a man who wanted to pray, but he couldn't get himself to pray. He tried to pray on his knees, but couldn't get comfortable, okay? And his pants would get wrinkled and stuff. He tried to pray standing, but his feet would hurt and his back would hurt. He tried to pray sitting, but he kept falling asleep. Couldn't pray. And then one day he was walking, and he fell headfirst into a ditch, and that's when he learned how to pray. Come on. Tough crowd. Not even a chuckle? Thank you very much. Okay. I thought it was funny. If you guys don't appreciate it, no more jokes for you. Usually, prayer is not our first response. It's usually our last resort, and that's not a good thing. So that's the first thing, is seek God as the answer to my needs. And I can do that all throughout the day. Anytime needs come up, I turn to God before I turn to anywhere else. Number two is I declare my daily dependence on God. Declare daily dependence. Because yes, God will answer your needs, and yes, God will answer your prayers, but it's not like a blank check that he signs and just, like, there's a condition. Whenever God makes a promise, there's like a condition. That if you want perfect peace, you have to trust in me and keep your mind stayed on me. There's always that condition. So the condition for getting your prayers answered is that daily you show your trust in God, that every single day. This verse is 2, 4, 6, 7 words. And 2 times in 7 words, the Lord stressed on doing something every day. Give us this day our daily bread. It's hard for us to understand this concept of give us this day our daily bread, because like I said, we don't need bread on a daily basis. We go to our pantries and our freezers, and there's enough food to last for a lifetime. I go home today, I still got food from Easter, okay, and it's still sitting right there. I don't need, on a daily basis, really to ask God for anything because I feel like there's already enough stored up. But what you got to realize is that when the Lord is saying this verse, okay, the whole world, up until probably about, let's say 50 years ago, which I know as far as you guys is eternity ago, okay, the whole world is different, like the way we live right now is different than it's been for the past thousands and thousands and thousands of years. They live one way and then we live a certain way. And the way that they used to live is that food is not like today where everything used to be, like, you know, if you go to Egypt, okay, they don't really have freezers. They call them freezers, but they're like barely cold air coming out of those things. Okay, so food doesn't last for months and months at a time. And they don't have like canned goods the same way we have where you can get everything that lasts forever. We got these apples in my house, and my goodness, they've been around since probably the third week of Lent, and they haven't gone bad. I don't know how, okay? But everything just kind of keeps. When I was a kid, okay, things were even different than they are right now. When I was a kid, we used to go to something called grocery stores. Okay. Grocery stores, that's what they're called. I used to love going to the grocery store with my mom. We used to go, you get the shopping cart. You sit inside it, and your mom tells you, okay, we're going to get one box of this and one of this. And you take it, you put it in the cart, you know, and it's nice and normal. And you go and pay, and then you put it in your trunk, and then whatever. You do this, like, on a weekly basis. This is the way it used to be until a revolutionary idea came up. That idea is called Costco. Do you guys have Costco where you are? You guys have Costco? Or Sam's Club or BJ's or whatever it is? These, like, mega things, okay? And no more do you go in with a grocery cart. You take the flatbed things, okay, that they're using like the hardware stores, okay? I used to work in a hardware store, and I worked in a hardware store and a grocery store. And I've done the unloading the thing, and we used to have, like, our tools was like a box cutter, and that's what we would use. The guys at Costco, their tools, they have forklifts, okay? That's the kind of stuff that they got going on over there. Costco, when you go in, you don't buy individual items. You buy cases, okay? Cases of, my goodness, stuff that you can't possibly imagine using in a normal person's lifetime. You wait in a line that's enormously long, and you make these huge payments, and then you haul it home, and you wonder where you're going to put it. My question to you is, does anyone really need this much at one time? One time, my wife Marianne came home with 48 rolls of toilet paper. Okay. Now, yeah, we use it at a pretty good pace, but does any house really need 48 rolls of toilet paper at one time? I'll tell you what's even worse. One time she went, got the 48 rolls, then she went back the next week and didn't remember that she got the 48 rolls, came back with another 48 rolls. I looked in our garage, and we had more than 95 rolls of toilet paper in our house. So we are prepared. Anyone has diarrhea or anything like that? We are ready to go. I've always wanted to use the word diarrhea in like a spiritual talk. Thanks, guys. The point of all this is, we don't understand, that's not the way it used to be. That most people would buy something, and you eat it, or else it kind of goes bad. So you really need it every single day to go to the grocery store, or every single day to go, or the little guy outside in Egypt who sells the bread or the oranges or whatever, and you go do that on more of a regular basis. This is the way the Lord wants us to treat all of our needs. So, for example, like I said, you have any kind of need that you have in life. Let's say, like, emotional needs. You all have emotional needs. You want to be loved. You all have social needs. You want to have friends. You all have, like, spiritual needs. You want to stop a sin, or you want to start a this, or all that kind of stuff. Every single day, God is saying to remind ourselves, give us this day our daily bread. That please, Lord, this day, give me the answer to my loneliness problem. Not like you do it on Sunday and it just lasts for the rest of the week. That's the Costco style. What he wants us to say is, this day, Lord, I want you to fill me with the loneliness. Like, fix my loneliness. And this day, Lord, I want you to fix my emotional or my relational problems or my family problems or my parent problems or whatever it may be. I'm reminded, when I think of like how much we need God on a daily basis, there's a quote in your handout, if Maura clicks for us, a prayer I read one time. I got this like in an email, one of those forwards or whatever. Dear Lord, so far today I'm doing all right. I've not gossiped, lost my temper, been greedy, grumpy, nasty, selfish, or self-indulgent. I've not lied, complained, cursed, or eaten any chocolate. I have not given into temptation or used my credit card once today, but I'll be getting out of bed in a minute, and I think I'm going to need your help. Funny example, but that's the true example. Okay? That's the way our prayers should look more like. That really, without God, every step of the way, like if right now God decides, no more help for you guys. Like, that's it. Like God removes it for one day, that's it. That's the end of the world on that day. So the point that I'm trying to make right here, God does not want us to be beggars, but God wants us to realize that every single day we need him. Because he knows that if 2 days go by and we haven't reminded ourselves, we may forget about him. Can I even think of an example in the Old Testament where God wanted to teach this lesson to the people of Israel? God taught this to them in a very, very clear way in the Old Testament. Who? Moses. Okay, good. More? What about Moses? Okay, you're on the right track.
When you went up to the mountain, and when Moses went up to the mountain and left the people by themselves, the kind of God.
Okay, that's a good example. But I'm thinking one's even more clear. Where God said that if you don't have me today, you're going to die today. The what? No, stick with Moses. Don't you remember when the people of Israel were in the wilderness for 40 years? Okay, they were like our friend Maria, where they were homeless. Okay, okay. What did God do for them? The manna, very, very good. Okay, they are homeless and they had nothing to eat. They're in the middle of the desert, and every single day God would send this heavenly food, this manna, down, and it would just appear on the ground. And God said very clearly, "Go, get what you need for today, and go eat it. And then tomorrow come back, and I'll give you more." Some people were smart, like us. They said, okay, when no one's looking, I'm going to grab 2 days' worth. Why? Why do they want to grab 2 days' worth? Because they didn't believe God was going to come through on his promise. They didn't believe that God was going to come through tomorrow. How do I know that God's going to provide for me? Well, look here, man. It's been 40 years in the desert. He's been doing that for 39 and a half years. He says he's going to provide, and he provides. These people didn't believe. So some people try to grab 2 or 3 days' worth. They go eat one day, come back to the pantry the next day, and what happened to the extra that they collected? It was rotten. It didn't last. That's the model. You get your needs met by God. Some of you had a great Holy Week and Lent and fasting and this and that. Look here, that's great. But don't just expect that it's magically going to continue for the rest of your life. You declared your dependence on God. You fasted. You didn't care about food. You woke up early. You didn't care about sleep. You did matanyas. You didn't care about your back or whatever. You did all this stuff. You prayed. You didn't care about TV. That's great. Come back again and do it the next day. Come back again and do it the next day. Because if you don't declare your daily dependence on God, it's not going to last. Okay? So the first thing that we said is through prayer, seeking God for all my needs. When I feel a need, I go and I turn to God right away. Secondly, even if I'm not feeling needs, okay, if I feel like I'm doing okay, then I remember that I'm only doing okay because he's providing the manna. So I go every morning and I remind myself that today, Lord, if I don't have you, I will be a disaster. I got A's all my life, but you know what? If today I don't have you, I'm going to be destroyed. Okay? Daily dependence on God. And then the third aspect is I rely on God's resources. Rely on God's resources. The way it's broken down here is like past, present, and future. Okay? So the day that you wake up and realize, I have something missing from me, I seek God. That's good. That's number one. Seek, answer my needs. Step two is that even when I have my needs and I'm in the present, everything's good, I daily depend on God. That's great. But number three is what continues it in the long term, which is rely on God's resources. Look here at Philippians 4:19. Again, a great verse if you want to memorize a verse. And my God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus. And my God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus. My God will meet what? All your needs? Like, even like financial needs? God will meet financial needs? Yeah, if it's a need, yeah, of course. If you really need it. God will meet like relationship needs? Yeah. That's what it says. It's like all means all. Like when God says all, he's not exaggerating. Like, you know how we say like, I was driving like all day I was driving. And it's like 4 hours. Okay? God's not like that. When he says like all your needs, he's not saying it like that. He's saying, look, any need that you have, I'll provide it for you. Now, again, I'm not saying anything you want or anything that you feel be a nice addition to your life. I'm saying it's something that you really need. How can he make this promise? Circle the two most important words, glorious riches. How can he make this promise? Because he is the richest guy ever. Like, there's no other way to put it. There's no person in the world who has more, like, resources at his hands. I know that you guys are way too young to remember this. But I'll see, in case there's someone here who is like is old school, like me. Little Orphan Annie?
Oh my god, I know her! I love her.
This is the best person in the room, okay? She laughed at my joke, and she knows Little Orphan Annie. Two pieces of pizza for you. Tell us the story of Little Orphan Annie. In, like, two or three sentences. Don't need to sing it for us. Just like, what's the story? The basis of the story.
Like, she didn't have a family because they died, and
she was homeless. Orphanage. Okay, like Maria.
My okay. best friend, and and she just hopes they make sure wants everything to be good eventually. Something good happens, and
what's the good thing that happens?
She's
a family. Who's the family? Yeah, the rich guy who looks like Mr. Clean, the bald guy. Whatever he is. Basically, that's very nice. Why don't I take over from here? Okay, so there's a little girl who's poor and who's homeless and who's an orphan. She's living in an orphanage. People in orphanages have many, many, many needs. Okay? And she didn't have clothes and she didn't have friends. She didn't have a house. She didn't have anything to eat. All this kind of stuff. One day, this bald guy, I don't know the exact details of it.
Oliver,
okay. Through the magic of music, okay, somehow decides that he's going to accept her into his house. He, like, adopts her. And now she goes from the poorest of the poor to now, like, this guy, like, takes, like, showers with $100 bills. Okay, this guy has all the money in the world, and he has a huge mansion, and there's nothing anymore that she needs. Anything that she wants to buy, she can buy it. Anything that she wants to eat, she can eat it. And she goes from there to there. Why? Because her father is very, very, very rich. That's a model that I always think of. Is that we have a father who, like the bald guy, is very rich. Unfortunately, okay, now this is the serious part. This is the part that makes me sad. Is that all of us treat God as if he's poor. And I think that's very insulting to God. That we look at him and say, you know, I have these needs, like I'm lonely and I want someone to be my friend, but I don't think he really can do it. My God is not rich enough to be able to do that. Or my God can't solve my problems in school. Or my God can't solve my family problems. Or my God can't solve this and that. And we go around and we say we believe in God and we wear a cross. Some of us have a tattoo right there. And we talk about this imaginary God that we have who's weak and who's pathetic and who can't solve problems. That's a bad thing. Again, I have a kid. If my kid comes to church right here, okay? Like I said, he's only two, but imagine he's a little bit older, okay? And maybe some of you guys are going through this right now when you're teenagers, and you want to come to church, like, wearing, like, funny clothes, okay? I'm sorry, I'm not going to pick fun. I was going to say with holes in your jeans. I'm really sorry. You can two pieces of pizza, too. You're a good sport, okay? So those are, like, nice at the bean holes in the jeans, but on Sunday, shoot, whatever, okay? Let's say you have, like, you know, holes in your shirt, and, like, you're scruffy, and you have dirt on your face, and all this kind of stuff. Would your parents allow you to come to church like that? No. Okay? The reason why, sometimes it... Okay, forget about church. Would your parents allow you to go to, like, an Azuma like that?
No.
Why? Because everyone's going to think that I'm not taking care of my kid. And everyone's going to think that my kid's walking around, you know, in scruffy clothes, this and that. I say, boy, like, you have nice clothes. Put on nice clothes. No, because my dad doesn't provide for me, and I don't have... I have for you. Like, why are you going around making me look bad? Like, why are you going around telling people that I can't provide for you? I can. You're an embarrassment to me, is what I would say to him. And that's what maybe your parents would say to you as well. Unfortunately, that's what we do to God. Let's walk around and say, no, my problems are so big, and I can't trust God. Why are you telling people that your God is weak? Your God is the richest God in the world. You, God, has glorious riches, and he can provide all your needs. Like, what is it that he can't provide? You find me one thing that God can't do. The best thing about God is both able and willing. Okay, these are the two components to help someone. Okay, he has the ability to do it and the willingness to do it. We all know he has the willingness and he loves us. Okay? But willingness without ability is of no value. I want to help AIDS patients. I want to help cancer patients. That doesn't do much good. I love them. Okay. I don't have the ability to help them. I can't solve their problem. So all the nice wishes and the songs that I want to sing for them, and that doesn't do much good. And that's how sometimes we think of God. That God has the willingness to help us, but not the ability. Look here, man. There's nothing that God can't do. He is both the most loving as well as the most able. And again, your beautiful church teaches you this every time in the liturgy and in the creed. Okay? Times in the liturgy and times in the creed. You guys know that big word. Actually, we prayed it upstairs in Thanksgiving prayer. The big word, pantocrator. Pantocrator. Four syllables. You know what pantocrator means? What's pantocrator mean? What's pantocrator mean? You guys use that word in your liturgy? You hear that? Okay, let us give thanks to the... Where is it?
Don't worry.
How about in the creed? We believe in one God, God the Father, the pantocrator.
Yeah.
It's not in Thanksgiving prayer. It's not in Thanksgiving prayer. Yeah, it's not in Thanksgiving prayer. It's in the creed. We believe in one God, God the Father, the pantocrator. Okay? What in the heck are we saying when we say God the Father, the pantocrator? Those two words are critical, and they're always next to each other. Pantocrator and Father. Pantocrator means almighty, means there's nothing he can't do. Father means all-loving, means nothing that he doesn't want to do. If it's our needs. So that's why the church says he's not only pantocrator, but he's also Father. He not only is he able to do anything, and he has the whole world in the palm of his hands, but he's also the most loving, and he's willing to do anything, again, if it's really our needs. Okay? Look at the next verse there, Proverbs chapter 30. This is a prayer that King Solomon uttered in the Book of Wisdom. Look here what it says. He says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread." Stop there for a second. Why is Solomon saying, "Give me neither poverty," that I understand, but he's saying, "Don't give me riches either." Why is he saying that? He's saying, "Just my daily bread." This is different than most of us would pray. We'd say, "Give me more riches." Well, he answers it in the rest of the verse. "Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God." This is why God likes things on a daily basis. Because he knows that if you have nothing, you may go out and steal and dishonor his name. He knows that if you have everything, you'll be a spoiled brat and you won't think that you need God. God wants neither of the two. So what he wants us to do is daily seek our bread from him. The problem is, not anyone can say this verse, "Give me neither poverty nor riches." Like, let's say, for example, popularity. "God, don't make me the most popular person in school. I'm content with how popular I am right now. Don't give me more friends. Don't give me zero friends. But just one or two would be fine." It's hard for us to say that. Like, the key in this whole thing is the whole idea of, like, being content. Solomon was content with what he had, and I think the majority of us, like, it's in the blood of a teenager to be discontent. Okay, no matter what you have, you always seem to want more. I don't want to say just teenagers. It's the world that we live in. Do you guys know a guy named Latrell Sprewell? No one? No basketball fans? He used to play for the Knicks.
I said basketball, see?
He used to play for the Knicks, but that was way before your time. That was, like, in the mid-90s. Okay, and then he started with Golden State, then he went to the Knicks, and then he's finished his career with Minnesota probably about 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Tell you what this guy said. This guy was a really good basketball player, but he was a jerk and a half. This guy, and I think it was the year 2003, was offered $14.6 million to play basketball, to play a game, something that all of us would love to do. Okay, drive fancy car and just show up, work a couple nights a week, play 82 games a year, and get $14.6 million. Listen to what this idiot said. This idiot refused to play because he wanted a new contract. He wanted more money. And I quote, this is exactly what he said. "Why would I want to help a team like this win a title?" Basically, they were saying, like, don't you want to help the team? The team is close to winning a title. Don't you want to play so you can help them win? He said, "Why would I want to help a team like this win the title? They're not doing anything for me. I've got a lot at risk right here. I've got my family to feed."
What?
I've got a family to feed. I would like to know what's the size of a family that cannot live on $14.6 million a year.
I have like 7 kids.
Huh? You have 7 kids?
No, no, not me.
Okay, good. That'd be a worse situation than our friend Mary right there.
Yeah,
listen, this guy was getting paid $14.6 million a year, and he said, how am I going to feed my family on something like that? Like, it's mind-boggling. Like, my family would be very content with just the 0.6 at the end. I'd be in heaven if I was making that 0.6 at the end. This guy was not content. This is the world that we live in. Solomon said, I don't want riches. Just give me just what I need on a daily basis. And I have news for you. If you want peace in this world, you need to learn how to be content with just the daily bread. Okay, that's what I mean by the going forward part. That God solved your need. You ask for your daily stuff. Now, like, be content. Don't seek to be the richest guy. Or don't seek to have, like, to be the most popular guy. Or don't seek, like, any of that kind of stuff. There's a lot of stuff in life that God chooses for us exactly the way it should be. The big one that I think of is, like, your family. Okay? None of us chose our family. None of us was choose who our mom is or our dad is or our cousins or our brothers or our sisters. We're given what we're given. Some of us are not content with what God has given to us in our family. And we go crazy on our parents or on our brothers or our sisters. Or we're always crying or this and that. And I'm telling you, learn to be content with what God gives you. And trust that if you needed more, if you needed a parent who had more money, God would give you a parent who had more money. And if you needed a parent who was, you know, allowed you to do this on Friday night, he'd give you a parent who allowed that. But if you are given a situation, be content and just trust in God. In the end, give me last click there, more. Why should I trust in God? Actually, one more click. Romans chapter 8, verse 32. Listen to this verse. Why should I trust in God? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? You guys understand what that says? Let me read it again. Try to understand it. He who did not spare his own son. Who's that? Who's he? God, who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? What he's saying is, if God is willing to give up the most precious thing in the world for you, which is his son, and he's willing to send his son to die for you and give you that, believe me, there's nothing more precious than a person's only begotten son. How can you think that he won't give you anything else that you really need? Do you believe that or don't believe that? Okay? That's what it means by trusting in God. Is when God says, look, I gave you my son. I gave you my son. If you needed anything else, I'd give it to you. But the fact that I don't give it to you means you probably don't need it. And in fact, it may be a bad thing for you or whatever it may be. The thing is, some of us have a tough time believing this. And you know why? When I was a kid, again, when I was a kid growing up, I woke up every day and I knew without a doubt that my mom was going to have breakfast for me. I knew that. Every day, even up until, I'll be honest, even while I was working, like after I graduated college, got up, there's breakfast on the table right there just waiting for me. How did I know when I went to sleep without a shadow of a doubt that tomorrow morning there's an Egg McMuffin waiting for me on that counter? How did I know? How was I able to trust it so much? What? Yeah, because I had experienced it every single day of my life. Because every single day I went to my mom and I said, Mom, thank you so much for the egg sandwich. She said, no problem, there's going to be one there tomorrow. And every day my experience showed me that when she says there's an egg sandwich, there's an egg sandwich. The only time there's no egg sandwich is when she says, I'm not going to be home in the morning or this and that. No egg sandwich. And even then, sometimes, she made an egg sandwich even before she left at night or something like that. So because I knew her, I had a relationship with her, I listened to what she said, and I believed her, I knew the egg sandwich was going to be there. Last click, Maura. Why trust in God? Simply because he has shown me his love. There's many people who don't understand what this means. The only way to find real trust in God is to get closer to him and to allow him, like, you got to give him a chance to come through on it. Like, I had to that first night go to sleep hoping wishing is going to be an egg sandwich in the morning. But then after I gave my mom a chance to come through, she showed me that she always comes through in the clutch. The closer you get to God, the more he will show you that there's nothing that he'll ever leave you in need of. Okay, but you got to take that first step to get closer to him and to trust in him. So that when you have a need, like again, you don't run to your friends, you don't run to the internet, you don't run to whatever, you run to God first and foremost. Okay? Seek God as the answer, declare my daily dependence, and rely on him going forward. Anyone got any questions? Yes, sir.
Do you think there is also that ego gets involved also in our lack of conception in the body? So we feel more comfortable in accepting ourselves and our own ability.
Absolutely. It's one of the things that's like inherited in us is that we think we can do everything. Okay? We think that, okay, like, that we can solve all the problems that we have in life. That, you know what? My family would be solved if my mom just did this. Or my life would be perfect if I was just able to be in this relationship. This would solve all the problems in the whole wide world. I'm telling you, it's not going to solve the problems. And in fact, if it did, if you could solve all the problems, then why do you have problems in your life? If I could solve all the problems in my life, why would I have any problems right now? If the girl could get a house on her own, why wouldn't she have a house? You know, like if it was that easy that I just go down the street and just pick up a house, why wouldn't she have one? You know? We can't solve all the problems by the fact that we have problems. Any other questions? Did I make it too cold in here? I have a couple beads of sweat coming down here. Okay. Why don't we stand for a prayer and then we can go on with the rest of the...
Pizza.